A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on Apple Podcasts.
Dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, dumpty, da, da, dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, diddly, dum, dumpty, diddly, dumpty, dumpty, diddly, dum, dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, diddly, dum. Dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, diddly, dum.
Hello, this is Dumpty Dum, a podcast about the archers and the goings-on in Ambridge. I'm Jacqueline Bertin, who's been practicing my nouveau timbre.
And I'm Stephen Bowden, who's brought his tools and his apron.
Ooh! And then there's you, our lovely Dumpty Dummers, who are warming up for the Bulls' three-legged egg and spoon Easter egg hunt relay race. Welcome to Dumpty Dum, a show about our favourite country village. This week's episodes of The Archers were written by Daniel Thurman. Coming up, we have calls from
Jade, who has nearly caught up to date.
Witherspoon, who is still feeling a little sympathy for George on Monday.
Paul from Olney, who is not impressed with either George or Emma.
Claire, who has joined the queue to slap George.
Emma from Poland, who is a bit unimpressed by Kenton and by Emma.
Marie from Winchester, who is another one who is not happy with George.
And finally, Witherspoon again, with further thoughts on, you guessed it, George.
We also had emails from, now wait for this, Amanda, Anne, Andrea in beautiful Brittany and Chris in Indiana. Plus we had The Week in Ambridge by Suey, a roundup of the Dumpty Dum Facebook group from somebody, and the tweets of the week from Theo. But before we start talking too much, let's remind ourselves of what happened over the last 7 days and a roundup of The Week in Ambridge from Suey.
Hello lovely people, it's Suey here, Queen O'Toole on the Twitters, and it's time for a quick reminder of the week in Ambridge. It's a short one this week, bear with me. Oh, what a week again. George has been an absolute shit this week. He got Brad to try and buy him beer, which got both of them barred from the ball. Then he was incredibly rude to Janine, and then was incredibly rude to her again. Emma defended the indefensible and then quit from the ball. She threatened to cut off George's phone contract. George tried to get Jakob to give Barkleby free treatment for the promised exposure. He declined. George joined the cricket team and after having his phone smashed by a cricket ball from Hannah's bat, became her circuit training partner. He threatened to expose her crush to Chris. She told him to sod off. That is not going to end well. Jolene got cross with Brad and George and with Emma and with Kenton, who dropped her in it to make a kiddies Easter egg hunt for Sunday. And right at the end of the week, she was exasperated by Robert and Lindy Bottom, who she'd given a pre-meal and wine to for Lindy getting elected onto the Cricket Club committee as chair. They don't know what's hit them. Robert has turned into a bona fide sleuth and is rummaging through ancient history for Barkleby while working on the peace accord between George and working on who is trying to do something to the ball with the dogs. So, Jolene is not happy with anybody, really. It's been a funny old week. I can barely wait for next week. I hope it's good.
So, thank you very much for that, Suey. So, Stephen, everybody's on tenterhooks. Let us have an update on the life of Tangle, because people don't realise we're recording this at a real early morning Saturday because of Tangle, aren't we?
Yes, I have to take Tangle to the vet this morning at 9 o'clock. For a post-operative checkup, because she went to the vets for dental treatment on Wednesday and had two teeth out. She seems to have recovered pretty well from all of that. She's her normal self, which involves sleeping most of the time. The one big difference it's made, while she was there and under anaesthetic, the vet trimmed all her claws. And because she's got this slightly dodgy hip, rather than jumping onto surfaces and so forth, she often pulls herself up with her claws. And she hasn't really worked out that she's not getting the grip she wants, so she's constantly falling off or failing to get up on things. So it's a bit of comic relief at the moment. They'll grow back and get sharp again fairly soon, and she'll go back to making holes in my sofa. But at the moment, she's in good shape, apart from the sliding over the floor and sliding over the sofa business.
Great. I'm very happy to hear that.
How has your week been? Any animal stories?
No animal stories, but I did have a funny incident coming in late from a meeting the other evening. I drive into my garage. The whole of the house is locked up. I drive in and then there's a door into the cellar and then I come up to the house. When I got in the garage, closed the garage door behind me, got out, took all my things out of the car, I also find that Loic's automatic reflex of locking that door, as he's the one who does the last walk around the garden with the dogs in the evening, he'd automatically closed the door with a key, as he always does, forgetting that I was going to come in by that door. So I had a lot of time running around the house, trying all the doors into the house, because there are four, in the pouring rain. And eventually I actually heard from his bathroom, his radio. So I thought, he's still in the bathroom. So I ended up phoning him, because if he'd gone to bed, his phone always stays in the bathroom. It never goes into the bedroom. Luckily, he came very apologetically and released me from the garage. But I was beginning to think, I think we need to do something other than just relying on somebody's not automatically closing something, because you're busy with other things. Don't think about it. So we've now hidden a key away in a secret lockup box somewhere, so that if ever it happens again, I will not have to sleep in the car in the garage. So there we are. That's the near divorce moment for this week. Anyway, since more than enough about us and Tangle, let's get on with the important bit, which is you, our lovely caller in Riz.
Okay. And first up, after this recognisable noise, will be Jade.
Hello, Pusscat.
Hello, Jacqueline and Stephen and all Dumpty Dummers. I hope you're having a great week. It's Jade calling in, and I'm still catching up, but I'm very, very, very close to being caught up. So just a quick one from me. First of all, I wanted to thank you for naming all the Dumpty Dum episodes something very, very specific from the week, but something that gives away no spoilers. So I really appreciate that. I loved Hazel Thumbstick, which was the one I've recently listened to. I do have a question, and this is probably for Stephen, about the making of the program. So every week you say who wrote the episodes. I didn't realize it was a different writer each week. And my question is, do they just have complete free reign, or is there some sort of overarching thing? I'm sort of imagining it like that game you used to play where one person starts a sentence and then the next person carries on and it ends up in some weird and wacky place. I'm imagining one writer setting it up for Helen to leave Rob, and then they come back 2 weeks' time and they're like, oh my God, she stabbed him. What do I do with that? So I'd love to know about the kind of how that all works. Is there an overarching script that the writers just sort of fit into? And how do you know who wrote the episodes? And sometimes you also mention that some character is going to be appearing in a few weeks' time. How do you get that information? Anyway, that's all from me. Have a great week, everyone. Bye.
Thank you for that call, Jade. It's good to hear that you've almost caught up. And if you've got as far as Hazel Thumbstick, then yes, I would have thought the next week or two you'll be fully up and live with us. As far as the program structure goes, the scriptwriters do not have very much free rein at all, given that they're commissioned in 6 week clumps, I think. And so you've got 6 weeks being written in parallel, pretty much. It would be really tricky if each scriptwriter didn't know where the previous one had left the week. But in fact, there's a long-term structure. They work out storylines many, many years in advance, and then they get more detailed into a sort of monthly or six-weekly cycles. And the scriptwriters are individually handed their week. And I think I've not seen an actual commissioning set of instructions, but it's pretty clear that they're told, here are the things that are going to be happening, here are the characters who will be involved. And so they don't have much freedom about what actually happens. They just get the freedom to choose the words that the characters say. And those, of course, are constrained by what those characters normally say. You can't have somebody completely rewriting a character, although people did say that Robert was somewhat rewritten and seems different at the moment. But I think that's partly because we're just getting used to his new voice, because it's the same script writers as were writing for him 550 episodes or so ago when he was last heard. And you asked about how we know about which characters are appearing in future weeks and who writes the episodes. That's all published in advance on the BBC Sounds web pages and in the Radio Times website as well. They post cast lists on the Friday episode, and that's also where you get to hear who the writer is. And actually, at the end of the Friday episodes, they tend to read out who the writer was for that week.
Brilliant. I think Jade Stevenson more or less answered all your questions. The only thing I can't remember is how long in advance do they write? Because we often talk about the weather. They don't get it always get it right, do they?
I think it's about 3 months ahead right. that they're commissioned, and then they turn it in a couple of months ahead of recording.
Right, so it'll be the episodes that we've listened to this week will have been recorded before Christmas or just after Christmas, something like that.
Yes, around Christmas.
Oh, well, I hope that helped, Jade. And thank you for phoning in, Jade, again. Lovely to hear you. Keep catching up.
Next up, we have a call from Witherspoon.
Y'all know how this goes. Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs.
Greetings, Jacqueline, Stephen, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here, again caller-entering after Monday's episode. This is getting to be a habit, but this week I'm in sunny Florida, where I've been visiting my mother. Today we heard from a boy and his pony. While George continues to act like an equine animal's rear quarters, I actually felt some sympathy for him. On the one hand, he continues to view Bartleby as an easy cash register for him, but I thought his love for his pony and a connection to his great-grandfather Joe did come through. There was also his denial about death that comes with youth. Jakob gently tried to explain that to him. Then the reality of the expense of taking care of an old and infirm beloved animal hit George between the eyes. My Angus is 14 years old, and I, of course, believe he will set the record for longest-lived dog. While he's in relatively good health, touch wood, he's being started on his fourth medication this week. I'm fortunate enough to be able to afford his medical care and wouldn't deny him anything. But those expenses will be tough for the Grundys. I know many, many Dumpty Dummers share a bond of great love for their four-legged family members. May their furry friends live very long and healthy lives. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for that call, Witherspoon. I think I took away from your call the first time I heard it was that you were sympathetic with George, and I only focused on that. But actually, knowing that Stephen's had Tangle at the vets this week, I know Mike Jennings, a regular supportive listener, has also had Eric at the vets for a similar kind of operation. And yeah, I have dogs too. So in fact, on the second time of listening, I really did take away what you were saying about the empathy that George has for Bartleby. I like the way Jakob handled George on this occasion. So if we just ignore for the minute the fact that George is, as Witherspoon says, the equivalent of a horse's rear end, it was a good scene between him and Jakob. And I liked the fact that he was brought down to earth with the realities of life and caring for a vet. And also it set the scene for the fact that he thinks that he's going to make it in the world of influencers. Influencers? No. Influencers.
Yes, I'm not sure how much George really cares for Bartleby and how much he sees him as an opportunity for making money on that influencing career. He certainly seems to be very focused on proving that he's the oldest pony in the world or whatever he comes up with.
But for his ends, maybe, yeah.
But very much as a means of providing material for his channel.
Yeah, exactly. His channel, yes. Let's not talk too much about George because everybody's talked about George this week.
Yes, we're going to have plenty more from George, but not just from George, but also from those immediately around him. Next up along those lines is Paul from Olney.
Hello, folks. It's Paul in Olney calling on Wednesday evening. George, what an obnoxious piece of work that young man is. I think I feel some sympathy for Brad here because he's being drawn into things. He was set up by George again. He was being sympathetic and apologetic to Jolene, and it was George who was shouting the odds and being completely out of order, as Jolene said to Emma in tonight's episode. And I'm not surprised that George got barred. But then I thought Emma was very out of order in tonight's episode as well, saying to Jolene that Jolene was wrong, that she'd heard it all from George. Well, hasn't she forgotten that it was only a few weeks ago, if not more recently, that George was calling her and Ed all sorts of names and denigrating their ability to set up and run the business that they want to? But I was particularly struck, and why I'm calling in tonight, is one comment that Emma made, which is that George has changed. He's grown up. Well, I think he's grown up enough to realise that he doesn't do those things in front of his mum. And that if she's not aware of what he's like and thinks he's changed, she will stick up for him. It's not going to work long term, is it? Anyway, let's see what happens in the rest of the week. Bye.
Thank you, Paul. Yes, Emma, you called after her first altercation with Jolene, after Jolene initially banned George and Brad. But then, of course, came the supposed apology and Jolene's refusal to accept George's non-apology. I think that Jolene was entirely in the right there. And Emma had another go at her. I really don't know what is going wrong with Emma at the moment. She is very good on some things, the support she's been giving to Ed and the way that she's working on that business plan of theirs, which I think it might be getting a bit overambitious if she's really going to be this flaky under other circumstances. But as far as George is concerned, she seems to have a huge blind spot, despite, as you say, the foul way in which he has treated her and Ed. So I don't know quite what it is about Emma that is causing these problems.
How old is Emma, Stephen?
Now you're asking. She must be mid-40s or something like that.
The classic midlife crisis in your mid-40s. For women, often it starts with perimenopausal symptoms and things. Because we started the beginning of the year, I think, admiring Emma, because she's going back to take an A-level in literature. She's trying to improve herself. And she'd seen through George, but she comes back to this George blindness that she has. It's a very curious situation. And in fact, it was curious to me that we didn't hear anything from either Ed or Will this week around the George issue. It was very much focused on setting up this situation between Jolene, Emma, with George as well. I think it's going to be very, very difficult to know where it's going from here for Emma, because there could be some real grundy crises ahead. And on top of that, they've got the costs of caring for Bartleby and into his old age and eventual death. So interesting.
Yes, I've just checked and Emma is 39. She turns 40 this year.
Ah, so she's a bit younger than I would suspect that she was having a real midlife crisis.
But she might see 40 as being a bit of a milestone point that she doesn't want to have crossed without anything to show for it.
Well, she's already said that, hasn't she? A few months ago, maybe, that she said she felt like they didn't have anything to leave. She didn't want to be always cleaning up other people's crap.
Yes, absolutely. Though the only person who really seems to be focused on leaving things to their offspring is Will, who sees his investment in their business as a means of passing it on to George.
Are we allowed to do a Chelsea snort at that point? Well, great call there, Witherspoon. Thank you very much. But we do hear from you later.
We do indeed. Next up is Claire. Now, there were some technical issues when she called in first. So she called back again on Friday. But there was so much passion in the first call that I thought that it was worth playing the parts that came through, which I've stitched together to try and be as coherent as possible, before playing the second call. So here is a double dose of Claire.
Hi, Dumpty Dum. It's Claire from Clapham here. It's Thursday evening and I'm just so cross about George. Oh my gosh. I am willing to get behind Hannah or anyone who is willing to line up and slap him. Quite frankly, I was really disappointed in Kenton when he didn't back up Jolene. I was cheering for Emma when she backed Jolene up and made George apologise and offered also put some boundaries down. And then I was really disappointed in Emma when she just jacked her job in because of George. Oh my God, Emma, have some sense about your child for once. So yeah, I'm just like, oh, I do want to see George taken down many pegs and ideally by the women of Ambridge, quite frankly, because he is a horrendous misogynist and he needs sorted out. Anyway, I know that's what was intended to happen and I am responding just as the way the writers would like. But actually, you know, I want him to really work it through. He was so awful to Jolene. He was so awful to Hannah. He's just so disrespectful. And Emma's not going to do herself any favours by trying to back him up. She should be holding firm because he's most disrespectful to her. Anyway, you know all this. Keep up the good work. Speak to you soon. Hi, Dumpty Dum. It's Claire from Tapham here. Re-recording my message again because it went wrong. But I'm still so cross about George. I think George is awful. He's really been showing how awful he is this week. And especially the misogyny. The way he's been behaving towards women in the village is so inappropriate. And the only people, really, who've been setting me any boundaries for women. I was so cheering on Jolene when she set me some boundaries and followed it in the pub. Really disappointed in Kenton for not backing him up properly. Then I was really pleased with Emma, who also set boundaries and said she was going to take his phone off him. And then she backed down, so that was really disappointing. Hooray for Brad, because he's also been there saying, right, mate, that's a bit much, you shouldn't be doing that. And maybe eventually Hannah and possibly Stella maybe will be the ones that will really put him right, because he absolutely needs people to tell him that it's not all right and his behaviour is inappropriate and wrong. Yeah, he just doesn't really listen to anyone, does he? And I really, really hate how he's disrespecting Emma. He's just behaving so awfully to his mother. And Emma's thrown away a good job that she likes for the sake of that terrible young man. Oh my gosh, Emma, grow some eyes, realise what your son is like. You know what he's like. He's already shown you what he's like. So, you know, behave like that. Let's hope he can get taken down more than a peg, but many pegs. Yeah. Anyway, that's all for now. Keep up the good work. See you soon.
Well, thank you for both those calls, Claire. Definitely a lot of passion in the first one. And I think you said exactly what so many of us were thinking on Thursday night. I don't think Friday night helps either our attitude towards George. One of the things that I took away from the whole George and Emma thing, because yes, Emma was very good at times this week, as we've already said, and then she was appalling. And I think she's definitely in the case of cutting her nose off to spite her face with the resignation. But then she held the phone contract over George as a kind of blackmail. She's blackmailing an 18-year-old, 19-year-old. He's an adult. So I don't quite understand where that's coming from. I don't think I've paid for a phone contract for any of my children for ages. And one of them is only 22. So I don't think, probably when she was 16, she took out her own contract. But maybe it's different here. Maybe the rules are different. I don't know. But yeah, the passion is there. We all want to line up and slap him. But I think we're going to count on Hannah. Now, Hannah sometimes comes across as a bit too sassy for her own good. I like that in her a lot. But with someone like George, maybe you have to go a bit more carefully to get back at him in a more subtle way, because subtle he is not.
I'm a bit worried about George and Hannah. He clearly is getting into his really nasty streak in dealing with her. And he holds her responsible for the damage to his phone. And incidentally, I do still pay for my son's phone contract.
Right. Well, there you are then, you see.
But yeah, I do hope he's taken down a peg or two, or as Claire says, many, many pegs. And Claire is very keen that it's the women of Ambridge who end up doing that taking down. And I can quite see why that would be a fitting response to George's rank misogyny. He really does seem to be anti-women far more than anything else. He's never like this to men. He doesn't treat Chris or Kenton or anybody else he's come into contact with recently as foully as he treats Jolene, Emma, Hannah, presumably everybody else. He's really
Fallon. He's a bit funny about Fallon, isn't he?
He had this crush on Fallon, and I'm not sure whether that's completely been resolved.
He was a bit funny a few weeks ago when he was helping Tony put the up on the wall, and she was not for the cowhides, whereas he'd been all over them and very positive about them with Tony. But when he realised that Fallon was not into them, he then sided with hers. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to be a very funny thing. It creeps me out, the whole George thing, but it's fascinating at the same time.
Next up, we have a call from Emma.
Hello, Stephen, Jacqueline, and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. This is Emma calling from Poland, where we have defrosted and spring is definitely on its way. A sign of this is that the storks have returned from their winter holiday and are once more nesting on the telegraph poles. My thoughts on this week on the Archers. Elizabeth's interaction with Jolene was really uncomfortable to hear. Elizabeth ignored what Jolene was saying, which was an emphatic no, and continued to railroad her into doing something which Elizabeth and Kenton had decided would be good for her. Then Jolene, quite rightly in my opinion, barred George and Brad from the pub. I can somewhat understand Emma's needs to defend her child, but I can't understand Kenton. He basically told Jolene she was overreacting, which has never once in my experience ever helped a situation. So Jolene's opinion was ignored by Kenton twice this week. For someone who's meant to be concerned about his wife's mental health, he is not listening to her at all. Emma gave a world-beating display of burying her head in the sand and conveniently forgot that George has recently called her and Ed clowns. She also seemed to forget that Jolene is her boss and ranted unreasonably in an attempt to prove that her family is reasonable. George calling her a loser didn't change her mind, and she still thought he was right and couldn't possibly have lied to her about the incident. And she's so sure she quit her job over it, despite being constantly worried about money. The irrationality was a shame after her being so brilliant with Miles and setting up the tree surgery business. But the drama continues, and I look forward to next week. Thank you for the podcast. Last week and every week. Bye.
Thank you for that call, Emma. It's good to hear that spring has arrived in Poland and, yes, storks. We don't have storks here.
It'd we don't
be rather
here
fun
either.
If we did. No, they seem to be much more Central Europe.
I think when we go to the Alsace or anywhere kind of beyond Reims, when on the east side of France, you definitely start seeing them. I remember once driving down through Spain and seeing them along a motorway on every single. They build special platforms now on the tops of gantries so that the storks have places to nest. It's fascinating.
It probably helps deter them from building nests
on chimneys.
Chimneys and telegraph poles and things where they might, the weight of the nest, fire hazard or might cause damage. Anyway, probably enough. Yeah, Emma, her behaviour, as we'd said earlier, complete blind spot about George. And I just don't understand why she thinks that it's okay to argue with Jolene about banning people from the pub. Everybody knows that the landlord's or landlady's word is final when it comes to that sort of thing, particularly when you're working at pub. She's not just a licensee, she is the employer. And George is, again, as you say, Emma, he's called Ed and Emma clowns, he's called her a loser, and yet she still takes his side. How can she not believe that he isn't capable of doing a decent apology? How can she not believe that when Jolene says he has not been behaving acceptably, George is somehow right and Jolene is wrong? It's just ridiculous.
It's very weird. It's very blinkered view. Now, it's very interesting what Emma said about the conversation between Elizabeth and Jolene and how uncomfortable it was to listen to. It was a very forced conversation, and Elizabeth tends to talk in a way that sometimes it sounds very forced anyway. But yeah, the fact that Kenton and Elizabeth plotted to get Jolene out of herself, and obviously it worked to a certain extent because Elizabeth knew which buttons to push. But that was Kenton really ignoring what Jolene wanted. And that made me very uncomfortable.
Yes, coming up with this plan for Easter and then dumping it on Jolene to deal with. Very Kenton, to be honest.
Absolutely. So there's the first few calls, and there's a couple more to come, which we'll hear after all of this. If you'd like to join in by calling us yourself or dropping us a line by message or email, Stephen is here to tell you how, and all the details are also in the show notes.
The first option is to record a message or a plot prediction by going to www.speakpipe.com/dumptydum. The next option is to send us a voice note or message via WhatsApp on 07810-012-881. Or +44 and remove the first zero if you're calling from outside the UK. Please keep your call to a maximum of 2 minutes. Or finally, we have an email address you can contact us on if you would rather write to us with your views. The maximum of 250 words, please. The email address is dumptydum@mail.com. Do bear in mind you need to be at least 18 to contribute.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Now, shall we get back to our calls?
Yes, and next up is Marie.
Hello, Jacqueline, Stephen, and all Dumpty Dummers. It's Marie from Winchester here. Was baking bread this morning, catching up on some episodes. And don't worry, I'm not going to be making a bread ferret. Maybe Stephen should have a go with his amazing oven. So I just wanted to call, and I'm really cross about George. He's so misogynistic, so rude. It's funny because he reminds me of Jay from The Inbetweeners, the one who just lives in cloud cuckoo land, thinks everybody loves him and all the women are chasing him. He's very much that sort of person. And I want to know, did his parents, have they created a monster? Or is it just him? I'd be very interested on Witherspoon's take on whether it's his upbringing or just in him to be so blooming horrible. But someone who was lovely this week, I thought, was Kenton. When he went round to see Fallon and just gave her lovely support. For a stepfather to do that, it's so lovely, really is lovely. And then I was a little bit worried too, because Linda and Robert, this whole cricket thing, which is boring, but Freddie doing that sports thing at the end. And when they were doing squats, people of a certain age doing squats, if they're not used to it, oh my goodness. That can really hurt. And I thought any minute now, someone's going to have an accident or something, but nothing happened. Luckily, they were all okay. I'm hoping next week will be better. Running out of time, so wish you all a happy Easter who celebrate and a lovely weekend off for everybody. And speak to you soon. Bye.
Thank you for that call, Marie. Whoa, bread baking? Not a ferret? How about you, Stephen? Are you planning a bed break ferret? Bread baked ferret?
Now, I did wonder about a lemon drizzle ferret. I don't think I'm going to be able to bake anything and then bring it up to London for the conference.
Yeah, transporting it might be. Can you imagine sitting on the train with a ferret made out of anything on your knee? I think Marie's going to be travelling with hers under her arm because it's looking pretty snazzy and pretty good. Now, obviously, Marie is cross about George, and as everybody is, and is asking the question. She's very interested to know what Witherspoon thinks. Have his parents created a monster? And after this, I think we're going to hear from Witherspoon, who pretty well answers that question without having known there was a question being asked. Now, Kenton, when I heard you say that you found him lovely this week, I had a pause for thought. And then you reminded me that he was very lovely. He was a bit shocked by Jolene's reaction to Fallon, which was completely out of character because her and Fallon are quite... well, very close, I think, and very friendly with each other. And Jolene's reaction was another hint that Jolene is not coping at all. Not that we need many hints because we know she's not coping at all. But then Kenton went round to see her to reassure Fallon. So I agree. But he went down in my estimations, as I said in response to the other call. Kenton really let us down when he is trying to coerce Jolene into doing stuff for the pub and for him and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, so that's Kenton's mode of trying to get people to do things, jollying them along a bit, whether they want it or not. Now, the other thing that Marie picked up on that I think nobody else did this week was Linda and Robert, and in particular that slightly bizarre scene when they saw Freddie. And I just don't know, that didn't seem to fit into the rest of the week at all. this whole business about getting them to do exercises and play cricket with each other to decide who he was going to vote for. And it just seemed to be stuck in. It was the only scene with Freddie in the entire week, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. But I think this is something that the Archers do very, very well. We had cricket shenanigans and Freddie and the foolishness of all that. At the same time, we had the anxiety of Jolene and Brad and George in the pub, the contrast between, because those scenes went backwards and forwards. So I think that that was a real setup as a contrast between this foolishness on one side in the village and the tension in the pub.
I agree with you about the foolishness. I agree with about all that. It was just the Freddie aspect to it
that
seemed to be out of place. The rest of it was conversations about would Barry Simmons be a popular winner and so forth. But that, then Freddie putting them through exercises just didn't work for me.
Well, yes, exactly. Well, I'm not as old as either of them, and the thought of doing squats is quite horrifying. No way. So, but great call. Thank you for that, Marie. Lots of food for thought there.
And finally, we have our last call, and this is a return from Witherspoon.
Okay, Dumpty Dummers, I've been asked to submit an addendum to Monday's caller in. To clarify, I was not complimenting George. I was expressing some empathy for a person going through tough times caring for a beloved aging animal. I noted that George was still acting like an equine animal's rear quarters, and as the week progressed, he began acting like what comes out of an equine animal's rear quarters. George is exhibiting some serious psychopathology, extreme narcissism, anger, sociopathy, and misogyny. Why, he's beginning to resemble a young Rob. We can speculate that the roots are the confusing issues of his parentage, some poor role models in the family, struggles in school, and the death of his stepmother. His own mother, Emma, has been very inconsistent in her parenting and messaging to him. His father and uncle stepfather have different parenting styles as well. It's interesting that George's only non-virtual friend is Brad, and we wonder why Brad puts up with him. The remainder of George's social life revolves around his online world. George's bravado does seem to be a thin layer covering up many self-esteem issues. It's an interesting segue to questions about the impact of the virtual world on Gen Zers. I just started a new book by Jonathan Haidt entitled The Anxious Generation: How the Great Rewiring is Causing an Epidemic of Mental Illness. As a child adolescent psychiatrist, I'm eager to read it. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for that call, Witherspoon. Marie asked what your views were, and we end up with extreme narcissism, anger, sociopathy, and misogyny, which is quite a collection to have in one so young. I don't know quite whether he's beginning to resemble a young Rob. Rob was always much more in control, I think, of his vileness, whereas George, it's one of his weaknesses and probably a saving grace as far as the rest of the village is concerned, that George is not really that good about long-term planning and being vicious. Yes, he's concerned that he's going to have a go at Hannah, and that could be quite unpleasant. But so far, Hannah has seen him coming and has been able to deal with him in every way, and I hope that that continues to be the case. Is it all based in his parentage? Is it this whole business about his stepfather being his uncle and so forth? He likes to make a big thing about that, and I guess he is teased at school about it. I think there's probably more to it than just that. And
yes, very interesting. I think there's more to it than all that. But I was fascinated for a very personal reason that Witherspoon talked about the anxious generation, because on Wednesday, I accompanied my daughter to Rennes, which is our county town, as it were, head of central of Brittany, where she was going to have some interviews at a business school for her master's. And in fact, she's that generation that has gone through COVID. The year that she did her baccalaureate was 2020. So she never did those exams. And then I spent the first 2 years at uni having imposter syndrome, not always having in-person classes, not having a lot of contact time. Obviously, they've come out of it now. She's done her 4 years, or she will have finished her 4 years this year. But I actually downloaded on my Kindle that book and started reading it. Fascinating book, and I hope it really helps you in your professional life, Witherspoon. Don't want to do a promo for a recently published book, but aside to say, it is actually the most expensive book I've ever bought on my Kindle, finding it fascinating. And in fact, I think the author, gracious, I can't remember what his name is now, he definitely sets out a project and a plan for parents, educators, governments, and all these and tech companies. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the future. But this has certainly been an insight for me starting to read it this week. I've only got about 5 chapters in, but there we go. So those are all the calls. And thank you so much for calling in, because we do love them. So do call in next week. Did we receive any emails or WhatsApp messages this week, Stephen?
Yes, we had 5. Now, the first was from Amanda with the subject line Martha and Hannah, and it goes like this. Hello, Jacqueline and Stephen. I've been listening to The Archers for decades and the Dumpty Dum podcast for weeks. I've been wondering if Martha will ever display any symptoms of fetal alcohol syndrome. Alice had some serious binges when pregnant, but there appear to be no concerns about Martha's development, which seems a bad message. Also, did I imagine that Hannah was supposed to have a parent with dementia? I may have misremembered. Anyway, love the podcast, Amanda.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant questions, Amanda. Yes, I'm glad you found the podcast. Martha, we have always had this question hanging over, and it seems to have been kind of forgotten. But Martha's still quite young. She goes to nursery, so she obviously doesn't have any of the obvious physical signs of fetal alcohol syndrome. Otherwise, we would know about it. But we don't know what damage is done to the brain and various other parts of the body, the neurons, etc., with the fetal alcohol syndrome. It might come out later. So, yes, and you didn't imagine that Hannah had a parent with dementia, because at one point when George was losing her home, we mustn't forget that part of their history, she talked with Stella, I think. She talked with somebody, Neil maybe, about the fact that her mum is struggling with dementia and that maybe she ought to actually leave Ambridge and move back up to the West Less.
Can't remember where she's...
No, don't worry. She should move back anyway.
Yes. And Will was aware of that. He made some remark at the time about it, because he wasn't too keen on George's plan. And he, I think, knew that Hannah was struggling with that. On the point about Martha, yes, a lot of the symptoms of fetal alcohol syndrome don't develop until the child is several years old. So I think it's too soon to say whether she's dodged that particular bullet.
Interesting. Now, the next email is from Anne with the subject line, is Harrison really stupid? And it goes like this. How does Harrison not realise that if Robert is chair, he'll get Linda for free? She'll be nosy and get involved whether wanted or not. Won't work the other way around, as Robert isn't nosy. He'd be a better chair anyway, as he's calm, old Robert was anyway, and good at smoothing things over. Linda's tenacious and get things done, but she's no diplomat. Also, if they both go for it, what a stupid plotline. They'll just split the vote and Barry will ruin. Best regards, Anne, who is still not brave enough to call in. Her words.
Thank you for that email, Anne. And I do hope you managed to pluck up the courage to call in. I think once you've done it once, you'll find that it's not as bad as you think. And it's actually quite good. And if you're a bit hesitant or so on, I can always work my editing magic and edit you into a smooth, coherent call. So don't worry about any of that. As far as Robert and Linda go, we now know the result of that vote. And in fact, it was a very close call between the two of them. But luckily, Barry Simmons did not sneak through the middle and snatch the prize. I think that Robert will support Lindy anyway. He'll provide that quiet background support. And I think that he is capable of moderating some of her wilder ideas. So even if he won't deliver quite as much as he would if he'd been chair, and even if she would have delivered almost as much not being chair as she will when she is chair, I think we still get the benefit of having the two of them in tandem. I think we get that Linda and Robert partnership to the benefit of the cricket club.
Yes, I agree. I have to say, I don't think it is Harrison being stupid. Harrison's seeing things at face value, and Linda is a go-getter and a doer. But yeah, as you say, I think the support she'll have with Robert. Now, we haven't really talked about the progress of their story this week with their inquiring into what's happening. And I feel slightly fearful for them, because Jolene was obviously very unhappy on Friday night's episode that they were doing it. I feel quite fearful that they're going around setting up as vigilantes, looking at the security around Ambridge. So it makes me feel slightly nervous. Yes.
Yes, it does feel as if Robert is seeing himself as, I don't know, some sort of character from a cozy mystery, a sort of sub-Agatha Christie
Golden
type
Age,
thing.
Golden Age.
Yes, the last thing we really need. But the police do appear to have done everything that Robert is doing. So I'd be surprised if he really does uncover something that they've missed. It's not like the golden age of detective fiction in that respect.
No, not at all.
Now, the third email is from Andrea in Brittany with the subject line of Jolene. Hello, lovely Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Andrea from beautiful Brittany. Well done this week to Jolene, or rather, good effort, but room for improvement. Well done for telling George where to go and telling him off for his attitude and for barring him. But not for barring Brad, who apologised and tried to get George to shut up. Jolene seems to be rather more traumatised than Kenton. Perhaps she'd be better off chatting to Vince than to Lizzie. At least she could unburden her real worries. Well done, Tracy, for sticking up for Brad. Jolly bad show, Emma. She knows what George is like and yet accepted what he said, even if she really thinks he's been trying recently, and I'm sure we all find him very trying. She should have asked for Jolene's version. But that's one of the reasons I love the character. Her mouth often works without reference to the brain, and regardless of the situation, she feels that she is in the right and that she and her family get beaten down because they're Grundys. At times like this, I want to give her a good shake. It would probably make no difference to Emma, but I would feel better. Although Kenton was right to encourage Jolene to be centre stage for the Easter event, he was useless at backing her up over George. He could have suggested debarring for a month. That way, Jolene doesn't appear to be issuing empty threats like a madwoman. That's all for now. Andrea. Except it wasn't all. Andrea came back with a follow-up message. Hi, Andrea here again. A quick update to my early emailer in. Emma, wake up. You need to do something about your son. Make a start by acknowledging that he is still a total... Insert your own expletive here. Like Emma, I have an 18-year-old George. Mine is an absolute angel, but I'd like to think that if he wasn't, I'd be able to see it. And although I would defend him, I hope I wouldn't completely disregard what other people say. And yes, I am feeling rather smug, as I can't imagine this would ever happen. Oh no, could I be an Emma? Are all parents programmed to think the best of their children, despite what we see and hear? Andrea.
Oh, thank you. Two good emails, Andrea. Thank you for that. And I know Andrea's been having a problem with her microphone on her phone, which is why she sent emails, because she usually does very good caller interviews. So yeah, Jolene, we've talked about Jolene and the effort. We've talked about Emma. So let's go to the basic question at the end of that. Are all parents programmed to think the best of their children despite what we see and hear? I think to a certain extent, yes, we give them the benefit of the doubt and you listen to them. And then you take away and then you find out the other facts around a subject. Having worked on a disciplinary committee in a senior school, I've had a bit of experience in the recent years of two sides of every story and taking into account the home life. So maybe, yeah, there's something in that. But Emma is absolutely blinkered, as we said earlier. So I don't think you would be an Emma, Andrea. You wouldn't be that blinkered. Emma really does need to wake up and see. And by the way, I think little George, and he's not little, in beautiful central Brittany, is an angel. So there we are.
I think that it's difficult. If you're a parent and your child is in trouble, on the one hand, you don't want to side against your child, side with whatever the authority figure that they're in trouble with. But on the other hand, you certainly don't want to be taken for a ride by your child having done something wrong. And the trick, I think, has always got to be to listen to what people say, not to jump in to defend or to attack or not to jump in on either side, but to say, right, I'll take this away. Then go away and find out the truth quietly and privately and then tidy it up afterwards. Either go back with the apology or go back with the justification, explanation and so on. The thing is not to get caught in the heat of the moment. And Emma is very poor at that. She is far too quick to jump in when this sort of thing happens, rather than trying to find out what the real situation is, work out what the best resolution is.
But even with the handling of George and the whole thing, trying to control him with the contract of his phone. It's all very instant, but she's always been like that. That's why she got into such deep doo-doos with Ed and Will, isn't it? It's just her, it seems to be her nature. And as we say, as she's matured, we keep thinking that she's getting out of it, but I don't think she is. So, and the fifth and final email is from our regular correspondent, Chris in Indiana, with a subject line in capital letters of, "I take it all back." And it goes like this. "Greetings, Jacqueline, Stephen, and greetings to all in Dum-de-dum land. There is just a lot going on in Ambridge, but much of it focused on George. I don't know what the writers are planning for him. And even if there is a plan, whenever I think he's having a turnaround to the character he could be, this spoiled creature comes back. Initially, he was a bratty 17-year-old and we were waiting for a reason and hoping he'd grow up. But now George is a 19-year-old man who shouts at women, but if you notice, never at men, who would probably punch him. He really needs a good punch from someone because he's crossing the line from disrespect to potential abuse. As you both know, I had such hopes for this character growing up, but that doesn't seem to be what's happening. And if the script writers handle this realistically, I don't see how George doesn't end up being physically abused. I don't see how George doesn't end up being physically abusive or going to jail. And Brad and Emma? Is Emma a fool when it comes to George? Absolutely. He disrespects her at every turn, and I don't know what the hell she or the rest of the family is seeing when they look at him. Only Neil seems to understand what he is. And Brad seems less and less like a smart person and more like a person who just happens to be good with numbers. Sooner or later, he will have to give an accounting for why he keeps company with a bad, self-interested person who has never done him any good. Really, I wish Brad and George would both grow up. Yes, and Emma too. Happy Easter to all from Indiana. Chris, P.S. One day, I will have to call in, but there never seems to be the time, and I hate the sound of my own voice."
Thank you for that email, Chris. It's good to have yet another one of your missives. And as I said to Anne, I think you should just try and get over that fear of calling in. Your voice sounds different to you than it does to the rest of us. That's the case for all of us. We all sound differently when we hear ourselves. And actually, if you hear yourself recorded, it often sounds different from the way that you think you sound. So please do call in. But even your emails are a welcome delight every week. I think we've probably said most of what we can say about George over this time. You talk about Brad and saying that he's coming across less and less as a clever person and more like a person who just happens to be good with numbers. And yes, it's certainly the case that Brad's intellect is much more focused in that sort of space. But he is good with people as well. I think that he and Mia are a lovely couple. I think that they're great fun. And Brad, generally, he's a peacemaker. He's always trying to do the right thing. He's got his head screwed on in the right place. And the only real problem is that he is so easily led, and particularly so easily led by George. And yes, he really does need to do something about that. Otherwise, he will end up once again, as he was with Caroline's bench, in trouble for something that he didn't do because he was not willing to disassociate himself from George.
But they're kind of a captive audience for each other at the moment, aren't they? Because they both live in a small village within walking distance of the Bull, the wherever. So they kind of hang out together because there's no other option. And they're cousins? Are they cousins?
First cousins once removed, I think.
Oh my goodness, far too complicated for my small brain. But Brad will go. Brad will be leaving soon. He will be going off to university and he won't be around all the time. And I had to say, he was very much lumped in with George in the first debacle with Jolene, the first banning. And he was definitely trying to help George with his attitude when they made the second apology and when they were at the cricket net. But I think this hanging around together, whether Brad goes in for the cricket as well, is another thing, because as we've said before, surely he's studying for his A-levels this year.
The question is, of course, how far Brad will go, because last we heard, he was thinking about not going away and going to Felpersham, which I think we all agreed would be a bit of a waste, but it does mean that he would stay around in the village and still come under George's influence.
Yeah, good for the storylines as well. Let's move on to Facebook, where we have lots of very busy, friendly, thoughtful and thought-provoking members. And we need to give a very warm welcome to the newest of you, who are...
Hannah Ball, Jacqueline Fear, Anne Hamilton-Allen, Claire Barnett,
Emma Horder-Parker, Peter Fairclough, and Fionn Lu... All right, Stephen, come on, how do I pronounce this?
Chloe.
Fionn Chloe. Thank you.
So let's hear what our Facebook group has been talking about this week from whoever it is who is doing this week's roundup. It's hardly a surprise that the Dumpty Dum Facebook group has spent much of the week discussing the vile little scroat that is George Grundy. But before we get our boots into him, let's look at a few other people. Talk about getting value for money, said Jacqueline Fear. Is Robert going to be in every episode from now on? Anne Lockett had a gloomy plot prediction to explain his ubiquity. I reckon they're going to kill him off in a few months with a terminal illness, and will explain why he's grumpy Robert and not nice Robert, because he's been in pain. I do hope not, Anne. Does everyone else think that Jolene is being blackmailed by Markie? Asked Clover Slack. What other possible reason could there be for her refusal to lend Fallon and Harrison money for their mortgage? She spoke to Fallon as if she were a stranger and not her only, much-loved child. There must be a reason for this behaviour which is totally out of character. Thank goodness Kenton stepped up to reassure poor Fallon. I think she's definitely worried about the impact Markie and his cronies could have financially, suggested Lillian McCarthy, which is why she's reluctant to promise financial support to Fallon. But I don't think at this stage he's actually blackmailing her. I think she's just very scared. Barbara Williams also doesn't think that Markie is actually blackmailing Jolene. Isn't it what Jolene has on Markie? He torched a pub, and she maybe knew he was implicated. She has nothing to hide, at least nothing we know about. Chris sounded very relaxed on George's vlog recording, noted Raffy J. I'm wondering if he's going to do a hoof GP thing. In my imagination, Chris is not hard to look at, and we know that he's fit and strong. I'd watch the Fit Farrier on YouTube. Mind you, I've been known to watch the Hoof GP, and now know more about cows' hooves than I ever did. How long's the queue to slap George around the lug now? Very long, I think. I'd pay to be at the front of the queue, said Helen Blackburn. He doesn't care about Bartleby, he cares about himself. I'm wondering why George, who seems to see himself as a social media guru, hasn't come up with the idea of crowdfunding to pay Bartleby's bills, said Shirley Farrant-Anstey. I keep seeing fundraisers for sick cats and dogs on social media. It would fit the make money out of other people Grundy ethos perfectly, especially if George turned it into a money-making sideline. Sheer laziness, suggested Sally Owen. Or maybe when he crowdfunded for Oliver's charity, he got banned for misappropriation. I just assumed that his sole focus is on monetizing his website for personal profit, said Joanne Smith. He'd see every pound donated to Bartleby as money being stolen away from him. Linda Hagopian was thinking along similar lines. George being slapped in the face with reality about taking proper care of an animal versus only using said animal for profit. And not to the animal's profit either. Grow a compassionate side to your personality, George. The best bit was trying to buy off Jacob with online fame and fortune, added Amanda Hatton. Picked the wrong guy there. Finally, Louise Lawton posted a link to an interview with Rosamund Pike, who has won an award for her appearance in the audio drama People Who Knew Me. She said that Margot Boyd, who played Mrs. Antrobus, the dog woman, as Joe called her, had been a near neighbour of many years, and that The Archers was emblematic of audio drama for her, but she wasn't the type to put in guest appearances. Interestingly, she didn't rule out taking on a proper character role. And on that entirely speculative point, I will return you to the studio.
Thank you to our mystery contributor, and thank you so much to everyone on the Dumpty Dum Facebook group. If you'd like to join them, please do, but please don't forget to answer the very easy membership questions so that we know that you are a real person. Now, I posted something from our Suey, who does the Week in Ambridge, about a get-together of the weekend of the Academic Archers Conference, the 27th, 28th of April, which is only in a few weeks' time. There is a pinned post at the top of our Facebook page, which asks you to fill in a form to say what your preferences are and basically register your interest. And once this weekend's over, we are going to have decided what we're doing from the feedback that we've had. So go on there quickly this weekend and we'll get back to you. By next, we'll be able to say what we're doing and get definite numbers. Now, on to Twitter, where you will find us at DumptyDum. Make sure you include the Archers hashtag using a capital T and A, so the visually impaired who use screen readers can enjoy any Archers-based tweets. As well as at DumptyDum, Stephen can be found at Wenlock House.
But we're both spending more time discussing the Archers on Blue Sky, where I am at wenlock.bsky.social.
And I am at jberto.bsky.social. So let's find out who's won the Twitter medals this week.
Tweet, tweet, Tiger.
Hello, Stephen, Jacqueline, Dumpty Dummers everywhere. It's Purple Pumpkin here with Tweets and Skeets of the Week. And my thanks as ever to Bernadette, Jen, Glynn, and everyone who tags at Dumpty Dum to make sure we see all the best ones. That's going to be particularly important after this week because we have the last live omnibus tweet along at the usual time in the morning. A lot of people say they won't be able to tweet when it's on at a later time. So here's hoping we still have enough funnies for next week. But this week on Twitter and Blue Sky, we were continuing to discuss the new Robert, with opinions still split on whether he is a changed character as well as a changed voice, and also whether it's fair play to be rude about the acting or only about the characters. On Twitter, a number of people, starting with Ambridge Pony Club, were welcoming to the tweet along author and barrister Imran Mahmood at ImranMahmood777. Jen started by claiming no one likes Helen, you shouldn't mention the shower scene, and so on. She listed polytunnels, Lakey Hill, Chili, and even Brian's cravats as key issues, but couldn't explain them all politely. So Mike Jennings, at Mike J. Jennings, explained they all symbolise shagging. If Susan's making chili, Neil is getting some action. And if someone is taking someone else up Lakey Hill, well, yeah. On that note, over to this week's medals for Blue Sky Skeets and X Posts, all of which we continue to consider as Tweets of the Week. In bronze position, it's Bury Me at Sea Trubshaw, at Elsie Trubshaw. Calling it Bartleby's Hide for the Cafe Wall. The silver medalist is Joe at joebowandarrow.bsky.social. Well, George may well be his own worst enemy, but you can see where he gets it from. And the gold medal goes to friend of the show, Claire Astbury, at Claire J. Astbury. Look, Lindy, there's no way the West Bromwich Mafia can get to me. I've only just been recast. The scriptwriters wouldn't dare kill me off so quickly. And on that hopeful note, that's it for this week. I hope to see you all on hashtag The Archers on Twitter or Blue Sky next week.
Thank you for that, Theo, and congratulations to everyone who's mentioned in this week's roundup. And please don't forget we're on Instagram at DumptyDum, where we're still looking for somebody to take a bit of the weight off Theo's head.
Next week, we'll once again be recording first thing on Saturday morning, so please get your calls in by midnight on Friday UK time. And as we come to the end of this episode, we need to say thanks to all our wonderful contributors and to the whole team who look after our social media and support us in so many invaluable ways. Thanks to all of you who are listening to us too. This lovely Dumpty Dum community is why we carry on doing this every week.
And we must say thank you to Kim Durham and Sonny Ormond for their voices and our podcasting parents, Lucy V. Freeman and Roy Phil Brown.
Thank you so much for listening and joining us today. We're now off to partner up with Hannah at Interval Training. So it's goodbye from me.
And it's au revoir et bon pack from me.
Dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, dumpty, dum, dumpty, dumpty, dum, 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 dumpty, d Dumpty dilly, dumpty dilly, dumpty dilly dum. Dumpty 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 dum, dumpty dilly dum.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.